Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to a brand new spoiler review here on an episode of Geek Bites brought to you by the
Geek Buddies! Hey! Yeah. Look at all three of us, and we didn't even have to mess it up because we know how to do it when there's three of us.
Absolutely. X-Men 97, Episode 6, Life Death, Part 2. You'd be fooled into thinking this is about Storm and Forge, but no, we got ourselves a little Xavier action in this one as well. We've got missing X-Men characters from intros. We're going all into the galaxy of the Kree. We've got a Ronan the Accuser. We got all kinds of stuff going on and messages about how you don't have to belittle people in order to elevate yourself and how you can make a friend of your demons and confront your darkness to come out even stronger on the other side. A lot in these in this episode here, written by Charlie Feldman. We're going to break it on down and have fun doing the spoiler review here on this episode of the Geek Bites. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's introduce ourselves. I'm the Outlaw John Rooker, writer, producer, and host here on the show.
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer. And if it looks like I am recording from the surface of the sun, it's because where I am in the valley, the sun is especially yellow right now. So even though I've got my very white ring light on, there's still sort of a yellowish hue.
Yellowish hue. I like that. Let's get into this Life Death Part 2. Michael, when we saw Life Death, last we checked in on Life Death Part 1. It was two separate stories. We had Sunspot and Jubilee going and doing the things that they were doing, meeting an older version of Jubilee, and then we had Life Death Part 1 with Forge and Storm here figuring things out. And by the time we checked in with them, when last we left them, Storm was super upset with Forge that the technology Forge had created in one of his down parts of his life was turned into a weapon that was used to take away her powers. So this entire episode, though, I thought was just going to be them. But we got Charles, we got Lilandro, we got this exploration. Charles coming back from what it seems like by the end of the episode to the X-Men just in time as we see Dr. Sinister using Bolivar, or Mr. Sinister using Bolivar Trask. So
he went to Sinister Medical School.
You know? Yes, right.
I didn't go to villain medical school for you to call me Mister.
So, Michael, your thoughts on this episode overall? Did you like that they split it up? Were we missing a title for the Xavier Lilandra situation? What are your thoughts?
I liked how they handled this episode better than how they handled the other. Okay. I think that doing the Jubilee Sunspot Mojo episode piece of it first and then doing the Life Death, it just ended up making where you had already sort of given that first part of Life Death the lesser part of the episode. Yeah. By putting it all at the end the way they did it, I think it made it feel a little bit more rushed. And I think even had they taken exactly what they had and split it up a little bit more, it might have felt like you bought the romance a little bit over time over the half hour. So I thought this was handled better.
Okay.
I think that they released, you know, yesterday a clip. I much like you just said, assumed that this episode was going to be a full Storm Forge episode.
Yeah.
But when they released a clip online last night and I saw the Imperial Guard and the Shi'ar and the Kree, my first thought was, oh, Professor X is coming back. And he did.
And he did.
So, yeah, I actually liked, I thought this, like I said, I thought this was better than that one as far as one of the episodes that kind of crosses two different storylines at the same time. Mm. And I thought these two episodes kind of fit nicely together.
These two stories within the episode.
The two stories. Yeah, sorry. The two stories. Mm. My fault. No worries. Professor X and Storm as two characters that are sort of away from the mutants, away from the mansion for different reasons, both sort of struggling. Storm sort of trying to decide who is she without her powers, dealing with her adversary in a very real sense. And Professor X kind of facing, you know, do I want to stay here with Lilandra? Do I want to stay with the Shi'ar? Do I have more to teach my X-Men? And both of them getting to the end and kind of going, nope, got to go back. I thought they worked really, really nicely together. I also think, you know, we talk a lot about how this show really handles mutants great, how it handles X-Men great, how it handles X-Men history great. But when you have an episode like this where, you know, you're dropping Rudyard Kipling and you're talking imperialism, like this show's going for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly. And Shannon, what are your thoughts? I mean, because we came out of that episode 5 emotionally drenched, dealing with a lot of trauma from the loss of these X-Men and these, and then the mutants, and seeing the Sentinels using whatever they use there to destroy most of Genosha. And here we go into the back half, because that was almost like a mid-season finale. We go into the back half with this episode that would deceptively feel like we're just pulling back a little bit before we really go back down the roller coaster again. But certainly both of these stories, that's something really powerful to say about the respective main people in each of those stories. What do you think of this episode?
Yeah, I think at this midpoint, like as you already said, you know, that last episode that we got with the attack on Genosha, if that had been like the 8th episode of the season, then we would have known that going into the 9th episode, you know, it's going to be balls to the wall action and consequences. But because it is in the center of the season, I was pretty sure, like, I mean, one, the title is the, you know, the part 2 of the Stormforge story, but I'm kind of like, I bet we're not gonna revisit what happened in the previous episode until the end. But it was still a really good episode, despite the fact that I want to know everything that happened in the aftermath of that Genosha attack. It was still a really, really strong episode. And what's funny is the how compelling the storytelling has been. Xavier has been mentioned a lot, and but as an audience, because the characters are so interesting and the new dynamics that were introduced with Magneto taking over, we didn't necessarily miss Xavier, but the moment that we see him come back, it's like, oh, that's right, here's this vital piece of this team, and we see this new situation that he's gotten himself into with Lilandra and with Deathbird, getting to see, you know Mohawk Superman, Gladiator, like it was all just really, really fun. And then, like, thinking about what you all had said about the way that the previous life-death episode was cut together, like, I was trying to think, like, would that have worked, breaking that episode up and intercutting it with the Jubilee story? I'm like, I don't know. I feel like they were maybe so stark that I feel like that may have been a little bit of whiplash. But I still really enjoyed what we got to. And Storm, you know, reclaiming her power there at the end. I mean, that was just a really, really satisfying moment. The power of will, literally creating clothes on your body, is incredible.
Yeah, the old school uniform. Oh, yeah, Mike, what do you want to say?
I do love, because this came up with the Madeline Pryor moment as well. I actually love that they're borrowing a little bit from some classic Sailor Moon style logic. Like, Madeline, Jean Grey cannot telekinetically create fabric. The Phoenix can, but Jean Grey can't. So when Madeline Pryor turned herself into the Goblin Queen, you're like, you can't really do that with your powers, but this is a great Sailor Moon moment, and I'm accepting it. And here, that times 1,000. Like, can Storm magically create an outfit with weather? No. Do I 100% accept that moment for the anime awesomeness that it is? Yes. Yes, I do.
I'll agree with Michael on that. Yeah, I like this. I mean, I do think that Storm should have had her own episode. I mean, you can absolutely put Life Death, which was only 10 minutes, the first part, and the scenes here together as one whole episode. So I'd be curious to find out why they split it up the way they did, because I'm not sure that it benefited the story to be split up. But I understand. But I mean, you could argue from a certain point of view, both of these journeys are very similar to each other. Both of them, in essence, leaders themselves, but one considering leaving, one being confronted with the fact that she in essence, was kind of low-key leaving by wondering about what it would be like to be human, and the adversary calling her out and saying, like, you're the one that started this process. It wasn't me doing it. It wasn't Gene. It was you. It wasn't the machine. It wasn't Forge. It was you already wanting to be human, considering that possibility, because you're afraid to lead, in essence. And Charles being asked to wipe his mind, in essence, and remove himself as leader of the X-Men. And even Lalandra saying, like, hey, codependent man, you know what? You can just let go and they can walk on their own. And Charles is like, well, they still have lessons to learn, I think. And it's like, these are grown-ass individuals, man. So you've got that confrontation in both of these. But at the end of the day, just like if you love family, no matter what happens, the drama and all of that stuff, it's about reconnecting with that. There's a strength in that. There's a power in that. And I thought that was, I thought it ended up working out, even though it didn't need to be split up. I still felt the episode was good overall. Yeah.
I mean, part of the challenge is, you know, it feels like,
yeah, you guys
like
are animation.
Me,
you tell me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's more of like, as you're looking like from a show running standpoint, like where you want everything to land. Like, I think they had this idea for this Jubilee Sunspot Mojo episode that was really fun. And you get to do the Konami bit and you get to see classic. And I think they were like, look, for a show that's retro, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to put that part at the beginning of the season. You don't go Genosha.
Yeah,
fun Konami X-Men episode. That doesn't work. So you knew that had to be at the beginning.
Right, right.
But then you also know you've got to do this episode. Like, you've got to be like, Professor X is still around. So could you have done like a Konami episode and Shi'ar Empire, and by the way, Professor X is around? But then that would have been a reveal too early for Professor X. And then part of what does make this episode work, even though they did split up Life Death, is having both Professor X and Storm.
Yeah.
Recognize what happened on Genosha at the same time.
Right. Yes.
It's a great way to gear us back up. So, like, we sort of had this, like Shannon said, you had this sort of mid-season finale of Genosha that it was like that ripped our hearts out. We've all been talking about it all week. This episode does take a step back and give us a little bit of a breather. And we get to see the Shi'ar, and we get great Deathbird bits, and we get all of this stuff. We get to revisit Storm. But now Storm's got her power back. That's resolved. Professor X is up here. And then they both witness the thing that we witnessed an episode ago.
Yeah.
And now we're all caught up. And now everyone's like, oh, shit, I got to go back. And now it's like they've arranged all the pieces on the chessboard. So I think it was like a little bit tricky to figure out where it went. And it feels like they were like – they realized they couldn't do all of Life, Death in one episode. And then they're like, we'll do it in an episode in 10. Episode in 10. Like, that's what we'll do. And so, you know, I think the way they handled it ultimately was the most perfect way to handle it? No. But ultimately, it got us where we needed to get. I don't think anybody's complaining about this season on the most part. So
going into the back half here, first episode into the back half of the season for sure. Shannon, let's deal with the specificity of the Storm episode here. Storm and Forge. We see, you know, Forge has got this pulsating purple shit on his shoulder thanks to the adversary's bite. And immediately we're in this alternate reality or dream sequence or something in Storm's mind where the adversary puts her in a coffin, has her confront her stuff. As I said, mentioned the fact that she's the one that was already kind of considering getting rid of her powers, a living death in essence, taking the easy way out, the safe way out, all of this stuff. And then we find out that Forge comes in, uses his Darkhold magic or whatever that was, and knocks out the adversary into some portal there. And then they ride off. I don't know how you take a man that injured on the back of a horse, but okay, they ride off to go find this cactus. They go inside this cave, and Forge's about to talk about the white lie, and Forge passes out, which I thought was great. And Storm's got to confront stuff. For those of us who are X-Men fans, the three of us and anybody watching, we know Storm's issues with claustrophobia, with tight spaces. So to kind of harken back to that, even though I didn't see the first animated series, I know that from the comics. It was nice to see that come back. And then she confronted her darkness, confronted the adversary when the flashlight fell out of her mouth, and she comes out of this thing and explodes and embraces her power, rejects the voice inside of her head that tells her she can't be enough, tells her she can't accomplish things. And as Michael said, puts on the old school outfit there, somehow materializing it, flies with the horses, goes back to Forge, cures him. He seems quick. I mean, he's like, let's go to Hawaii, like right off the bat. And then thing ends with her seeing what happens in Genosha and heading back to the X-Men compound. So what did you think of this episode specifically? What stood out to you? What really worked for you? And did you have any reservations about it?
No reservations. I mean, the adversary is scary. That's a scary bad guy. And that's a really, really, really fun bad guy, because that's a bad guy that literally gets into your head and feasts on your doubt, on your, you know, on everything that you don't like about yourself. It's literally fear kind of manifesting. So I thought that was all really, really nice. The Forge bit of like acknowledging the white lie and pass it out. I feel like maybe that's something we should start trying to apply. If you ever see someone pass out suddenly, it's because they just told a little white lie. the visual of literally seeing that coffin, that wooden coffin with the chain come together. And again, the art direction on the show, being, you know, very, very loyal to the original animated series. I mean, they're doing their own thing, and it looks really, really good. I mean, I think it's easy to get caught up in the storytelling and the nostalgia, but also the plussing that they're doing with what has come before it visually is really, really stunning. That moment where she gets into the mine looking for that, you know, the cactus that grows in the dark, that whole situation. I mean, when I imagine we've all had those moments, those, you know, fears where like we drop something and you don't hear it land and you realize how far up you actually are. And then you get, again, the anime demon owl chasing you. Like, again, that was just from top to bottom, that was just a really, really satisfying story. And like, yeah, sure, you know, lightning can't create a cape. But it was still a really, really awesome moment, especially as, you know, you see her flying again. It was just really, really nice. And then again, seeing that horror on her face, not only does the lightning make a cape, it makes the hair on the side of her head grow. But seeing that, she feels like she's turned a corner. And immediately she watches the television and finds out what's happened on Genosha. So I thought, just pacing wise, I thought it was laid out really, really nicely.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see what she does with this newfound belief in herself, newfound strength, as she comes back to the compound. Because Scott's a ball of issues about being a leader. Magneto is gone. Xavier's coming back. So it's got to be interesting as we go into these next few episodes. Michael, your thought on this episode? What'd you feel about this one? Did you like it? What stood out to you for you, and were there any drawbacks for you?
I do. I mean, you know, I think, and this is, look, with everything they're doing in this season, it's sort of in the same way that they did the entire Madeline Pryor, Goblin Queen, Mr. Sinister in like 30 minutes. Life Death is such an amazing story, and this is definitely like the Cliff's Notes version, but I think they hit everything that was really important. Right. I'm just in order of things that happen, you know, I mean, just everything between Storm and the Adversary is great for all the reasons that you guys just said. Like, the Adversary is great because, and I've seen people on Twitter all day, like, it's like in Three Amigos where they're like, everyone has an El Guapo. Like, this is like, everyone has an adversary. Like, true. The way it was written and the way the adversary got inside Storm's head, it's relatable to any of us.
Any one
of us has that voice in our head that's like, you're not good enough. Like, you suck. You don't deserve to be a leader. You don't deserve to be successful as a podcaster, as a writer, as an actor, as like, take your pick of whatever it is. Like, we all have that voice inside of us. So Storm having a literal conversation with a monstrous owl demon about those fears and concerns, every one of us is like, yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm cool. I'm in. Now, when Forge came down and used his magic to get her out, I thought it was a great nod to the MCU because Forge is using MCU magic.
Yeah.
Like, MCU magic is visually very specific, and it's hard to imagine now, but there was a time where someone going like this and making a giant sparky circle wasn't something that we all saw on a regular basis. And so having him use a very specific MCU type of magic visually, I thought was really, really interesting, even though for him it's from, you know, I think he's a Cheyenne Indian. You know, that he learned that from his mother.
His mother, yeah.
But then it was like, we got to get the cactus. Okay, I got the thing. Even before that, the whole her in the coffin, the visualization, everything you guys said, it was great. Again, it's what I love about animation, and I think they're really utilizing it, is you can get a little bit weird it doesn't have to always make perfect sense. And I know that Bo DiMaio posted, which kind of adds to the whole thing, that, you know, when Storm is in the coffin and says, "I can't breathe," he's been posting that image with some George Floyd stuff. Mm. So like the "I can't breathe" was very intentional, which, again, the show is absolutely going for it.
Yeah, I love it.
But yeah, then I think the entire thing, again, in an episode where we're talking about imperialism and taking over other cultures, to go into this cave and talk about, you know, the white man coming in, the Civil War, everything, and, you know, Storm saying what they did to your people, it's just another parallel to what Professor X is dealing with in his side of the episode. And then, yeah, her dealing with the adversary, accepting that she has these fears, embracing this as a part of her, all the things that she sort of says with the thing, again, you're like, yeah, that my therapist says that that is what I am supposed to do too. Now, when my therapist says it, I'm like, ugh, I don't know. When Storm fights a giant owl demon in a cave, I'm like, yeah, I can do that. Okay, got it. Cool. And then I think, again, the reason that the magical transformation works, Shannon is correct, lightning does not make hair grow on your head. If anything, it does the opposite. But I think the reason it works is because this is why animation is great.
Yeah.
Like in a live action thing, yes, we need to go, oh, I went to the place and the person made me this costume or this is this. But like, do we really care? No. Yeah. This was a transformative moment for Storm. She accepted her flaws. She accepted her fears. She embraced it. She had a transformation. And in the world of animation, in the world of cartoons, like when you have an emotional transformation, you get a physical transformation. Mm. So she got that thing, and kind of going back to that classic Storm costume, which is not what Storm wore in the 90s series, seeing her in that classic costume that is 100% Storm, and then watching her just fly joyously through the sky, and you're like, you know, and I think for all of us, after dealing with episode 5, we're like, well, thank Christ the Omega level mutant is back, because...
they're going to need her.
Some shit.
Yeah, they're going to need her.
And then, like I said before, having her kind of come up to that moment and experiencing for her what we experienced last week, and knowing that she's going to dive back in 100%, just gets you amped for what's to come.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I should give shout out, as Shannon mentioned, to the art direction here. Production design was Anthony Wu. Art direction is Roger Oda. Both of them doing a wonderful job with this, along with the animation and everything else involved as well. Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. I mean, we all go through it. That's the thing about this. The great thing about stories in comics and stories eternal are, it's great to touch base again with that story, with that message, because we all go through stages in life. Life's a fucking video game. Every time you get to one level and conquer the bad guy or bad person on that level, it's a whole nother level. You got to conquer that.
It's called a boss.
You fight your boss. Some of us are our own bosses. So you confront these things and you have to go through it and you have to climb out the other side. And I liked a lot of what the visual stuff. And you bring up the George Floyd thing is fantastic. It didn't even occur to me, you know, a black woman caught inside of a coffin being told she's not, like, that. There's so much resonance there that, of course, culturally I wouldn't necessarily think. But to have Bo tweeting that, it makes you automatically makes you remember these things. That's really smart. As you said, Michael, which I think is great, the show has been going for it, and the show goes for it unabashedly. And these are the things that me personally, I feel, have been missing from the MCU shows. They present these things, but they don't go all the way. And I think this show has gone all the way in arguably a limited amount of time per episode. And I think it's fascinating to watch the economy of effort to get to these issues, to make strong stances on certain issues and be unabashed about it. And I love that about this show.
That's a great phrase for this show. Economy of effort, I think, is a very, very apt way to describe it, because they have a limited amount of time. You have 30 minutes. Now, like, these are full 30 minutes episodes, which is great.
Right.
I'm looking at you, Bad Batch. These are full 30 minute episodes, which is wonderful. But yeah, like, even with that, like, they are telling such a wide sweeping story and kind of servicing so many characters. And yet there's that, that effort of economy there. Economy of effort.
Yeah, there we go. Only Michael could say, D. Bradley Baker, you're not doing enough. All right, so let's move on to the next story. Michael, I'll give you first dibs on this one. This is the Charles and Lilandra dealing with the Shi'ar, dealing with Ronan and the Kree there, dealing with Lady Deathbird, who clearly has plans to be the queen herself and take over. But it's just funny to see Lilandra going, "I found my man. Rejoice, we shall be in love and be married." Very funny stuff. Even Charles calling out her jingoism, went something with that was hilarious. But Charles... being challenged here by Deathbird to say, you're going to have to agree to have your mind wiped in essence of the memories, and you have to give up the X-Men. And right in a critical moment at that ceremony, when he has to give up the X-Men, something happens. He doesn't do it because he still loves that and he's not ready to do it. Fight breaks out, and then Charles goes, enough of this shit, and transports everybody to the fucking astral plane, and the professor is in session handing out lessons, and then Gambit shows up, and that really shatters. I'll tell you this from my own personal thing. That 30 seconds with Gambit made me relive episode 5 in fast motion, and I was in pieces by the end of those 30 seconds. It was incredible. Charles's pain and his understanding, going back and telling Lalonde, I have to go. I have to go back to my X-Men. I have to do this. So really powerful stuff here, Michael, throughout. What did you think of this story here within this episode?
Well, so this this part was really fun because just as a Marvel nerd, it's just great.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like, so exactly, for anybody who never really watched the 90s series, who doesn't remember, the Professor X reveal is kind of a, oh shit, he's alive. For anyone who remembers the 90s episode, we've all been sitting there going, I mean, he's not dead. The Shi'ar took him away at the end. So it was nice to be like, oh, okay, yes, we are all correct. But, you know, this was like, even though this is an animation and not live action, the Shi'ar have entered the MCU playing field. Like we've gotten the Kree, we've gotten the Nova Corps, we've gotten the Skrulls, but now the Shi'ar are here as well. And it was great to see them. Deathbird is great. Lalanda's great. And seeing the Imperial Guard, Gladiator, seeing Ronan in animation with his classic look, just like the entire opening was just after sort of having our hearts ripped out at the end of episode 5, getting to episode 6 and being like, Hey nerds, here you go. Here's some nerd kibble for you. Just chew on this for a few minutes. And it was just a ton of fun. Yeah. Deathbird is giving Emma Frost from last episode a run for her money on bitch bossness. Like, it was good. Like, stepping on Ronan with her high-heeled boot and drawing blood is a vibe.
Yeah.
But then what I really liked about it is that they really dove into what the Shi'ar do and the whole concept of imperialism. And really kind of having what was nice about it is that there was this parallel going on between what Deathbird was asking Charles to do and what the Shi'ar just do. Like, what the Shi'ar do is they come and they like conquer a place, you know, like just kind of wipe the floor and then say, hey, let us build you back up, but let us build you back up as a part of us.
Right.
And that's imperialism. That's the British Empire. That's how that works.
That's our empire. That's every empire. Really.
And in point of fact, in this episode, when Professor X is having the conversation with Gladiator about their views on art and imperialism and mentions Kipling and says that Kipling had a lot of burdens. And if you just go read Rudyard Kipling's poem, White Man's Burden, that's imperialism.
Yeah.
So again, even though like we're dealing with mutants and Genosha and all of this and Scott Summers having a mental breakdown, you know, we're touching on the way that different groups oppress other groups of people, which is inherent to the X-Men. And then what Deathbird is basically asking Charles to do is ignore everything that you've been and just become us.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what the Shi'ar do. She's just asking to do it on a personal level. So the whole concept that they were dealing with here and the conversations that were happening was just fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
In addition, whoever wrote the line when Deathbird referred to the our Milky Way ghetto deserves all the awards. And
that
from
was
this
fantastic.
Point forward, as I said on Twitter, I'm only going to be referring to our galaxy as the Milky Way ghetto from this point on, because it was amazing. But yeah, when Professor X finally reached that point, you know, he paused on Give Up the X-Men and Deathbird jumped on it. Whole fight breaks out. And yeah, then he's like, oh yeah, I'm the world's most powerful telepath. And then puts them all in school, sits them down at the desk, and Professor X's the shit out of them. And it was just great. And, you know, and in Professor X style was like, let me teach you why what you're doing is wrong. And let me talk about the fact that coexistence is messy. Yeah. And so that's bringing the entire Shi'ar imperialism idea back to the core ideals of what Professor X is with the X-Men, which is, yes, it would be easy to say, okay, separate but equal. You guys go live here and you guys go live here. It would be easy to say, we're going to conquer you because we're more powerful, and then you have to do what we say. The hard, messy, confusing thing is, let's all coexist.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's not easy. We know that living in the world that we live in today. Like, pick any fucking issue and any fucking oppressed minority or anything that's happening on a global scale right now, and you can attest to the fact that coexistence is fucking hard, and we have not figured it out yet. Which is why they call Professor X an idealist, and idealism is its own kind of danger. But so you have this, what I loved about this is in taking a break from all the drama of Genosha, they were like, let's have a really fun episode, but also just drop some philosophy and, and ethics and morals on you. Let's just really like dive into all of this. And then to your point, right when he's almost got them convinced that they're going to change their entire way of running a galactic empire, psychic vision happens. Gambit shows up. He sees a bunch of dead bodies and desks, and he's like, fuck, I gotta go back. We gotta go back, Kate. Like, let's go. And so again, just setting those pieces, like, we took a nice little break. We touched on the Shi'ar. We took a nice little break. Storm worked her shit out, got a better costume, and got a full head of hair. And now we're kind of moving forward into moving. I mean, I know we have one more episode before, as Bo DiMaio said on Twitter, he said, you know, episode 5 was his warm up. Episode 8 to 10 is where we're just going to get wild.
Yeah.
So we got this little break. We're going to see what next week is. And then Storm and Professor X are going to get caught up, and 8 to 10, we are off to the races.
It's fun to see a person who's been fired, but chiming in very well on all this stuff and really like giving us more perspective on what was going on behind the scenes and creating these
episodes.
I'm fascinated by it. Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever quite seen the dynamic that we are seeing play out right now.
Yeah.
Where a showrunner was very suddenly and abruptly let go for reasons that, again, still none of us know.
Right.
The show comes out, the show knocks the socks off everybody, and at the halfway point of the season, the showrunner's like, all right, fuck it, I'm gonna start chiming in again.
Yeah.
So now we're like, all right, so like Marvel's not saying anything.
They can't.
Bo DiMaio's on Twitter being like, let me tell you why I did all the things that I did.
Right.
Everyone on Twitter is like, I don't know what you did behind the scenes, but what you're doing on screen is great. I'm very confused and don't know how to feel right now.
People going through their things for sure. Yeah, I thought this episode worked, Shannon, on a macro and micro level. Like, it isn't just empires. It's human beings. Are you backstabbing that friend at work? Are you cutting them down at the knees because you're afraid they're going to take your job? Are you fucking with certain people in your residential area because you don't want them to lead the HOA? You want to be leading the HOA? You can take it on a macro or micro level or medium level. This idea of power should be used to elevate everyone, whether they're powerless or have the same equal power. And power can be used to help everyone. And yes, coexistence is messy, but it's necessary. It's the right thing to do. And on the other side, it's like, you've got to take care of your business as well, personally, in your life. You know, are you operating from a place of fear or from a place of strength and abundance? These are the things that we struggle with all the time in our lives. Just like we saw in Storm, her struggle. This is what Charles is laying out here, which I think is fascinating, as Michael hit on. What do you think of the story here within this episode? What stood out to you or what didn't work for you?
I mean, as in typical Vogel fashion, he got a lot of it.
Yeah, he likes to. Yeah.
But what I would say is the dialogue in the series is just, it is crackling. It is snappy. It's just really, really well written. Along with the Milky Way ghetto, like the moment where I can't remember what Deathbird says, but Charles's response of like, you know, congratulations on saying the quiet part out loud. And then she fires back within 60 seconds, throws the same line at him. Like the dialogue is just, again, it's just so lively. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to listen to. And in terms of just the action, watching, you know, again, Mohawk Superman lay people out, basically Marvel being like, you know, Marvel has many Superman like characters.
Right.
Gladiator is one of them. But having him use a lot of Superman's powers with the breath and the heat vision, sort of like, this is what we would do if we had Superman. And it was so much fun. I mean, one, watching them, you know, lay out the Kree right at the beginning, but then when he has to turn on Warbird's guards. And that was just, again, just so satisfying. Like Gladiator, I'm curious if we'll see Gladiator again in season one. My guess is maybe not. But Gladiator, the Gladiator Xavier scene when they're looking at the two art? Big statues. Yeah, where he's talking about, you know, I thought, I can't remember the term, if it was like lunacy, like art is lunacy, idealism is lunacy. I was like, I don't know who this Kipling is. Like, it was just a really, really fun scene to watch. And the moment that, yeah, Xavier kind of full-on Professor X is up and literally has people in a classroom at desks, and he's giving out demerits in the forms of apples in their mouths. Like, it's so, it was just so satisfying. And the whole idea of, you know, you don't have to make someone feel worse for you to feel better.
Right.
Like, again, just really, really great dialogue. Of the two stories, I do think this was the stronger one.
Mm. Yeah, it felt like a Breakfast Club, where he was like, they're all, no, are you done? No. So somebody was I think the guy in the front was the Judd Nelson. The older dude felt like the Judd Nelson guy. It was rejecting everything that he was trying to teach them, which I thought was great. Yeah, fascinating stuff. So let's, real quick, because I know we're already at 35 minutes, so we got to wrap this up. The final shot, the final scene here with Trask, Bolivar Trask, and Sinister here. Michael, your thoughts on this real quick?
Yeah, look, Bodemeyer has already said a while ago that Mr. Sinister was going to be the big bad. So the fact that Mr. Sinister seems to be behind everything is in keeping what we've heard. But yeah, like, basically it just looks like Bolivar Trask, not a good guy, but Mr. Sinister's worse. And whatever he's got planned and what's going on, like, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how it all develops. But this was, again, I mean, this episode, even this little tag at the end, it's just dropping the puzzle pieces into place. And we've seen this 1,000 times. We've seen this in a ton of shows where you get to those last few episodes and you just feel like they've got to answer every question that they've raised. Like, you're just like, okay, well, I need to know this and I need to know this. And then they kind of fall flat.
Yeah.
And this is nice because we're just sort of slowly moving the pieces into place so that those final episodes can just run. The other thing I'll bring up, and I ask this to both of you. Do we think Magneto's dead or do you think Magneto's coming back? What are your theories?
No, they're all coming back. You know how comics works.
Okay, let me ask a more specific question, because yes, in the world of comics, everyone's probably coming back at some point.
Charles has died like 30 times.
Yeah, do we think Magneto is coming back this season or not?
I think to bring him back at the end of this season really takes the teeth out of the death.
Okay. I think he is coming back in the final battle in some way, shape, or form. I don't know that he died, right? We didn't see a body. We saw the green light. Did he save the Morlocks or not? Or did he save himself? I don't know. So I think he is coming back for the final battle in some way.
I've seen a lot of people, like, one of the only shots from episode 5 that is sort of still a question mark is it Jean or Madeline? Madeline, her vision. The final shot in her vision is a bunch of rats. And I've seen some people be like, oh, that's what Eric sees when he wakes up because he's buried underneath Genosha. Like, there's lots of theories. The only reason I ask, and I don't actually know, and I don't really have a horse in the game one way or the other. I don't think that Magneto is dead forever, because Magneto has died multiple times in the comics and he's still around. But the reason it came up for me in this episode was, what's great about Magneto and Professor X is we all understand what the dynamic is. We all understand that Professor X is peaceful coexistence and that Magneto is like, I don't think that's going to work and we need to fight for our rights by any means necessary. But what they've done so great here is, by Professor X, even though he did see the vision and saw and understands what happened, he's on the other side of the galaxy.
Right.
And this whole episode is him talking about the importance of coexistence. So they brought Professor X back, but in an episode that sort of lays out, this is who he is. Yes, coexistence is messy, but it's essential. This is what we need to do. And Magneto just got destroyed in a horrible, horrible, graphic, tragic situation. Yeah. So if he does come back, Professor X is going to roll back in after being on the other side of the galaxy and be like, hey guys, I know this was bad, but we should work this out. And Magneto's going to come out of the rubble and be like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
And I just think if he does come back, they've really created this really awesome dynamic where I think most of us tend to be like, okay, we understand where Magneto comes from, but we understand that Professor X is the more right one or the more justified, like morally, whatever. I think they've created a dynamic where we're like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
kind of going with Magneto a little bit here. Like, so I, that's where, if he did come back, I think it would be really interesting.
But knowing where Cyclops is more than likely going to be at the conclusion of everything that happened in Genosha, do you feel like that, again, bringing Magneto into the equation kind of lets the air out of the potential Xavier Cyclops confrontation?
Not really, only because I'm a big fan of the Uncanny X-Men run where Magneto, Emma, and Cyclops were running their separate X-Men. And I mean, I feel like this might be kind of the direction that they're going with. Like when Scott Summers had enough and said, fuck it, and went and got his new costume with the X over his eyes, like he went off with Eric. And I think the way, what they set up at the beginning of the season was a very strong Cyclops is like, I don't know how Professor X did this. How could Magneto ever leave the team? And having Professor X show up and having Magneto come back and having Scott Summers in the middle and Professor X being like, well, Scott, you've got to come with me. And him being like, I'm going with this guy, I think is a really strong, dramatic thing. So, again, I don't know that they're going to do that. But to me, that would be a really interesting dynamic to play out.
Yeah. Yeah. Shannon, your final thoughts on Bolivar, Trask, and Sinister? I mean, if Bolivar is scared of Sinister, that tells you how much we should fear this guy as well, right?
Yeah, well, and just wait till he gets his MD and he becomes Dr. Sinister. You then it's going to be...
One time I visited a prostitute in the war, my life's been a living hell.
Mr. Sinister is a great villain that most audiences do not know a whole lot about.
Yeah,
He's the one that never actually made that jump to the movies. So having him be, having audiences get reacquainted with the X-Men through this show and then focusing on Mr. Sinister, I think is one, the right move, but also it's like they're kind of prepping the landing for the eventual big screen MCU Mr. Sinister debut.
Yeah. We'll see. And Mephisto too. We have our way.
One day.
Listen, for me who has not watched the original animated series, this felt like I was reading one of those, you know, like insane runs that the X-Men occasionally does, going way out into the galaxy and having these characters pop up. And I agree with you, Gladiator is fun. To me, I thought it was a combo of Savage Dragon and Superman, so I like that combo in as I was looking at it, because I fucking love Savage Dragon. So I was like, great to see that. So to me, as a comic book lover, this show has really like excited those juices again, got those juices flowing. It's been a long time since I collected comic books. To see this stuff kind of play out in such a great way, it's just been so much fun. And this is yet another example, this episode, of that kind of stuff, especially when Charles put them all in the classroom. That's something you would see on a panel in a comic book, and it's like, oh, this is genius. So loved it from top to bottom, and we'll see as we go into the next few episodes what's going to happen. Okay, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review for this episode, Life Death Part 2 of X-Men 97. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you're listening to us or watching it here on the YouTube channel. We appreciate it madly. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
While you were doing all of that following, the other things that we would love for you to do is smash that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, check out all the amazing content he's got there. A lot of it has me and Shannon joining him. Some of it doesn't. It's all awesome. Check it out. Leave your comments below. What did you think of episode 6? How did it stack up to episode 5? How did you think they handled life death? Where do you think they're going? Is Magneto dead? Who's coming back? What's going to happen? Things are about to get crazy. We got a Captain America shield in the mix.
Yes.
God knows what's going on. So let us know your comments below. If you're listening to us on the podcast feed right now, go ahead and leave us some stars and some comments so we go up in the rankings and more people can find us. And as always, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. And one quick shout out to the director of this episode, Chase Conley. I already mentioned Charlie Feldman wrote this one. And the voices here, Morla Gorondona doing Lilandra, Allison C. the Smith, of course, doing Storm. Shout out to Ross Marquand doing another voice, another character in the Marvel Universe, is the voice of Professor X. Kari Kavanoff as Deathbird was fantastic. Of course, my doppelganger, Gil Birmingham as Forge, was incredible. So, and David Arrigo Jr. doing Gladiator, a lot of fun there. So just giving some shout out to the people. And I'm sure we're going to see more of Bolivar and Sinister. So I'll give them shout outs next time. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. Be well. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the Geek Bites, brought to you by the
Geek
Buddies!
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.